Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller. That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Us, I like you, like it or not. That's when it got wheels off. John McCrae is not just the world's foremost vibraslap player. He is also the founder and frontman and driving force behind the band Cake, and has been since the early 90s. He's a terrific songwriter, unique in almost every way, in the way that he builds songs, in the way that he delivers the vocals on these songs that he's written. But what's always impressed me most about John is how thoughtful he is, and how conscientious he is, and how much he cares about this world that we all are trying our damnedest to either survive or save, or both. John does a lot of work on behalf of causes in which he believes. He puts his money where his mouth is. He devotes his time and his energy. The reason I got to know John is because we worked together on a group of which he was the primary founder, although he would spread the credit around, I imagine, but I remember it being very much his brainchild. And then it became something much bigger, a group called the Content Creators Coalition, that is a group of musicians and creative type people who are coming together to aggregate our power to work on behalf of artists' rights and the rights of creative people in the face of monolithic giants that tend to, on a large scale, devalue what it is that we do. So John is a great musician. John is a great statesman in that he is politically active, tries really hard to make the world a better place. And John is someone who works tirelessly to help the cause of creativity and the lifestyle of those of us who try to feed our kids with this weird job. In addition to all of that, John is very kind and very funny. And all of this is stuff you're about to find out as John McCrae is my guest on this episode of Wheels Off. I'm here with John McCrae of the band Cake. Hello, John.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. What are you working on right now, and how is it inspiring to you?
Well, that's a good question. I think I'm working on mixing, which is not particularly inspiring, but it's also very gratifying if you can sort of nail the mathematics of it. You know, it's very much like an equation where if there's a lot of one thing, there has to be something way on the other end. In other words, like hi-hat needs bass in a way.
Ah.
You know what I'm saying? So there's that. And so yeah, that's a different kind of inspiring, but I'm excited when I finally can figure it out. But it's like more like a math problem than a story or something.
Is this for a new Cake project?
Yeah, it's we're releasing a single in January, I think. With one side of it is a song called Sinking Ship, which is sort of a negative song, obviously. And then the other side of it is a cover of The Age of Aquarius, which is an old 70s rock musical song that we covered. And so that's what I'm mixing right now. And I hope I can figure out the right EQ for the hi-hat.
It seems like Cake, more than with a lot of bands, the mixing is such an integral part of the process, right? Because
so much of what you do is like really heavily riff driven and sonically.
Yeah. Yeah. You can either sort of have it be effective or have it be sort of, you know, just sort of maybe theoretically this is good, but it doesn't like move me viscerally, you know? And I guess that we do aim for some sort of visceral sort of response from the music.
In a way, it's almost like the mixing is part of the songwriting.
Oh, yeah, I think so. In the same way that, like, you know, initially we used to make our own posters and videos and album covers. It was kind of a craft project that that went too far, you know, that... And, you know, but it, I mean, I think this, those things are a form of expression, all the different, you know, just, it ends up being a lot of work.
Yeah. Know? But you don't seem like you've ever been averse to work. Like you're pretty hands-on.
Yeah. I mean, I like work. I like this kind of work. I've had some bad jobs in the past. But yeah, this is better than driving a truck for me.
Yeah.
I hated driving a truck.
So you did that?
Yeah.
For whom?
For a pool supply company. I used to drive this truck of like pool chemicals and hot tubs and crap and, you know, drive like all day long. I'd get there, I'd leave at 7 and I'd come back sometimes 10 at night. It was a horrible job.
Like a big box truck.
Like not a big long truck, but yeah. A big box truck. Yeah. Ugh. And it's just sort of. There's a lot of anxiety driving a big vehicle in traffic all day.
So,
but I wrote some songs on the road, you know.
While you were driving?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
See, that's pretexting and driving, songwriting while driving.
Yeah, I have my little, like, tape recorder, you know. Like
cassette recorder.
On the seat, just in case, you know.
I pulled a cassette recorder out the other day, and my kids were looking at it going, what is that?
Right. It's pretty weird looking. Yeah. But yeah, so it's, you know, music and creativity is a great job. It also, but it, you know, it's different when it's how you eat food, obviously, becomes heavier. And it's even heavier when it's how other people are eating food. Because of your creativity.
Yeah.
That gets even heavier.
Yeah, it puts a lot of pressure on you to keep going.
Yeah.
Work.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to work.
Or maybe it's not whether you want to, it's whether you can genuinely express yourself.
You seem like you're in a pretty active period.
But I
am. But you have, in the not distant past, you've gone through a couple of little stretches where you have checked out a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, with the new sort of business model of music, I don't understand why I have to record music. I record music like I'm recording an album now because I want to, but I know that I won't get paid for it.
Yeah.
I'm just doing it because I like music. I like recordings, and that's something that I enjoy. I'm going to have to play shows in order to pay for food while I do that thing, you know. So I can't really, like, you can't focus as intently on recording anymore. Unless you're a giant superstar.
Sure.
You can't just work on that. You have to sort of, as you know, you have to sort of cut it up with, we're going to do a show in Florida, you know, next week or whatever. You can't just buckle down and make this thing.
Spend 4 months at a castle in France or whatever.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Can you imagine if there was the money to do that? That's not ever going to happen again, I don't think.
You started pretty young, and you and I both started when the old business model still held sway. Was it always what you knew you wanted to do, or was there like an epiphany moment that you remember where you went, I want to live the life of an artist?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think about the life of the artist so much, but I did think, here's this thing that I could do that, you know, and I think I should have thought about what that life would be a little bit more, you know, I thought it through more, but I did, you know, once I started getting close to that life, I'm like, that's a little bit of a cruel hoax, you know, like I can see how this whole thing inverts when you get up close to it. And But just the music itself. I remember listening to music when I was, 12 or 13. And I thought to myself, I could make one of those. I could do that. And I think it's mostly delusion at that point. And it's a good thing that I didn't start playing shows at that point, because it probably would have been pretty discouraging for me. But I kept doing it. And then for enough years, and then it started sounding better.
God, when kids come to me and ask about that, I always talk about it takes 100 songs before you can write a good song. Were there a lot of years where you were just creating?
Yeah. So 100 songs, or more accurately for me at least, 100 song fragments that are really cool, that you think are really cool, for one really good one that you want to finish. And then, so you get 10 songs that are solid songs. You're not going to be able to arrange all those in a way that does those songs justice. So then maybe it's just 3 out of 10 that you'll find arrangements for.
Is that something that you go to collaboration for, or is that something you just lean on yourself?
I sometimes go to collaboration if I don't have an idea ahead of time. Sometimes, though, I'll have I'll know what has to happen. Sometimes I'll know what has to happen, and I'll go to other people for collaboration and regret it.
It's hard to undo that offer, right?
Well, because there's a social weight to this thing. Somebody else has worked on your song. It's hard to jump ship.
Yeah. And we tend to like the people that we work with, but then it's hard to hurt their feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a timeless struggle. What do you do?
So to me, you have always seemed, I won't say that you seem self-confident, because you definitely seem like you acknowledge your sort of inner struggles. But you seem like you're a really self-possessed artist. But I wonder, when you go to create, are there negative voices in your head that you have to deal with? I know a lot of people I've spoken to, and I myself have sort of dealt with an imposter syndrome thing that happens, where you feel like you're going to get called out for being a fraud. Mm-hmm. How do you overcome that? What do you deal with?
Oh, I don't... Yeah, I think some of those voices are helpful. Mm-hmm. So just let's just assume that everybody's a fraud.
I like that.
Probably it's more true than we like to admit. But then, hearing those voices that say, well, this sounds fraudulent. That's a helpful thing, I think, within the context of maybe not the inspiration process, but in the editorial process, where you have all these verses that you've written, and just to be able to know that this verse sounds fraudulent is probably really good, a good voice in your head. But, I don't think those two things happen concurrently very often. So it's like you come up with this thing that you completely believe in, that's like you're Jesus or something, right? And then later you go back to it and you say, well, I like this one bit, but the rest of it's crap. And so it's, you're not Jesus anymore. It's like you're more analytical about it. You want to know if something sounds fraudulent.
So it's like a trick we play on ourselves.
Yes.
In the first draft.
Yes.
Where we build ourselves up.
Yes.
And then in the second draft, you really have to be.
Yeah. And how many times is your subconscious mind going to fall for that shit? Up front.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's all messianic and everything. and then, we're going to chop a chunk off of this thing that was like the second coming of Jesus. We're going to cut a piece off and use it for this shitty pop song. No, I don't know.
Do you feel like when you're younger, it's harder to get the second half of that equation right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And older, probably maybe the first half,
Yeah, that's really true, right? Yeah. As you go, it's harder to build yourself up and believe. Yeah. Believe your own hype.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But perhaps when you're able to, I don't know. I mean, I see you and your band making records that are still relevant and people still connect with them. And that kind of perseverance seems to speak to me to something that's really important in creativity. I mean, how have you been able to keep it going? You know, do you ever have that feeling like, okay, isn't it enough?
Yeah, right. Don't you have enough of these songs? Right. Why should you absolutely have to make more? You know? That's a good question. I mean, that's a good question for Western civilization generally. Like, how did we decide this? You know, but I think I just have to go with my instincts and whether I still have a few things to say. I don't necessarily think that there should be some, you know, mandatory sort of thing where you have to, you know, release an album every 2 years or whatever. I think that's ridiculous. But I, you know, so I do think it should be just the individual, where the individual has things that they want to, ideas that they want to put out there.
Yeah, that seems market imposed, like kind of arbitrary.
Right. I know. I mean, the good thing about having the music industry implode was there's no right or wrong anymore. Like this what we're doing now is we're just releasing a series of singles this year into next, and then maybe at the end of them, if we feel like it, there'll be a full album. But you know, we're doing it sort of the reverse of the way it's been done. But there is no reason to do anything right anymore, really. Like in terms of like pragmatism, there's no like, oh, you can't do that because why? You know, because why? You know, there's no reason why. Nobody's getting paid, so who cares?
Before, we were talking about the upside to the sort of negative chaos that's in our world right now, and maybe this is the sort of artistic version of it.
Right, absolutely, yeah. At least there's a little bit of silver lining.
Yeah, I remember there was an interview with Bowie and Rolling Stone years before I myself acknowledged that the music business model was collapsing, mm-hmm. and he was talking about its imminent collapse, and the thing he pointed out was that in a world where there's no riches to be had via music, the only people making music will be the people who just kind of have to make music.
Or else they have to be on meds or something.
Yeah. Although when I spoke with Roseanne Cash, she said, but that's a really like, that's an easy thing to say when you're sitting in a position of, you know, relative wealth and comfort.
I think he sold his catalog to like Wall Street or whatever, I think. So probably right as he was realizing this ship is going down, it's like, hey, you want to buy my catalog?
So finally, if you were to come across a 21-year-old version of yourself working in today's world, what advice would you give yourself?
So I'm the same person, though?
You're the same person.
Yeah.
But it's today, sadly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, today, that's a good question. That's a hard question to answer.
Fred Armisen said that he would tell himself to get his wisdom teeth taken care of.
I like that it doesn't have to do with art. I don't know if I would give myself any warnings or information. I just think my belief is that you're supposed to have problems, you know, so I don't really want to help myself avoid problems. So yeah, it's weird that I feel that way, but I think I do. I think I wouldn't give myself any advice.
I think you and I have talked about this before, about the idea of our kids growing up rich. It's kind of that same thing. It's like, not that our kids are necessarily in great danger of that.
Yeah.
But it's that thing, right? It's like if it's too easy, then who are you? Maybe we're...
Right.
Maybe we're sculpted by our difficulties.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And you can create monsters of other people by smoothing out their difficulties. I just dropped my son off at school today, and he was very cavalier leaving the house. And, oh, I shouldn't talk about my kids. But anyway, I think I will. He's very cavalier leaving the house and didn't have, was, you know, I, you know, I reminded him, hey, you know, do you have everything? Is everything? But he's all being, you know, super silly. And I'm like, okay, let's go. And we get to school and he forgot his boots and they're doing this thing where they need some boots and he's supposed to bring them and he wants me to go back and retrieve his boots for him. And then his teacher like, oh, look, there's just somebody left a pair of boots in the lost and found. You can wear these, no problem. And, you know, he sulked about the whole thing and, you know, didn't like the pattern on these boots or whatever. And so, you know, I was conflicted for a minute, you know, about, oh, should I just go? And, you know, I don't want him to be sad. But I just thought, you know, it's good for there to be, you know, some vicissitudes, some consequences of, especially if nobody's arm gets chopped off, nobody's going to get hurt with this. This is just like the pattern of the boot is wrong. So, you know, anyway, so I didn't retrieve his boots. He wore the patterned boots. Everything's going to be fine. I think it's a similar thing, you know, somebody didn't have Thanksgiving with their family because every time she has Thanksgiving with her family, her brothers make her do everything. She's just like the Thanksgiving holiday slave or whatever. And so she just like took her family somewhere else and they had a great time. And we said, you know, you're going to create monsters of these people by letting them like make you into their slave. You know, like that's, you're creating bad character in not letting there be, you know, problems for somebody that's not pulling their weight.
Yeah.
So
that's funny. So that question of what would you tell a 21-year-old version of yourself becomes a different thing when, I mean, you and I both have kids. And that's like an actionable situation where we are sort of looking at, and they're not versions of ourselves, but the ego makes it a little bit.
Yeah, and you'd want to protect them from stuff and sadness and, you know, but I think there's also something you said for having to figure things out for yourself and know that you figured it out.
Yeah.
You can't, I don't know if you can shepherd everyone.
Yeah. Well, I've always really enjoyed watching the way you work. It seems like you really care about the work for its own sake. And I am really grateful for everything you've done with the Content Creators Coalition and your work with in, you know, politics and activism. I think you're super cool. And I'm really grateful that you talked to me about creativity today, John. Thank you.
Wow. Thanks.
Rock on.
All right. You rock on.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.